Okay. Now we're in Genesis 25, and basically, Isaac in the last chapter had finally gotten married, and they went and found a woman for him. So and brought him back home to brought her back home to him, and she was very satisfactory. Most women are, you know, we don't ask for much, just everything. But she was a she was the wife for him. This is the one that God chose, because if you look at the circumstances of how it come about that she was the one that came home, you could see God's working all the way through it. And anybody, when he got home, he told the attendant that was went over, the official that went and got her, told the story of how he did this. And you could see God's working in all this sort of stuff. So they're back home, and we're starting a new chapter. That kind of stuff. That it kind of turns, and this is mine labels this. I like labels. They have like headings in the Bible. You know, somebody author has went through and segregated it for us, because really in the original Bible there wasn't even chapters or verses. It was just like a book, straight on through. No sentences. No punctuation. And I think I'm confused nowadays. Could not imagine it. So let's jump right in Genesis 25:1. It says, "And again, Abraham took a wife, and her name was Keturah. She bare him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, and Ishbak, and Shurhan." I have probably butchered those names, but we'll just go on with it. We don't know. Everybody has their own pronunciation. "And Jokshan begat Sheba and Dedan. And the sons of Dedan were Ashurim, Letzim, and Lumimian." Lumimian. Okay. Lululemon. No. "And the sons of Midian were Epher, and Hanok, and Abida, and Elha. And these were the children of Keturah." Now, when you look back in the thing, and you look at the time frame in here, Abraham at this particular time would have been how old? Well, his wife Sarah died at when he was like 125, 130. His son, it was probably 40 years whenever they sent and got Rebekah and brought her back. So, if it is in chronological order, he has to be like 120, maybe 100, 130, 100, whatever, right here, okay? Over 130. There are some people that think that this same woman was a concubine. Because if you look in 1 Chronicles 132, it says, "Now the sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine, she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Midian, Midian, Ishbak," basically the same thing you read here. And that, so there are some people that think that this could be after, and there's other thoughts of words that this was, that she was a concubine during Sarah's time too. And then this goes to show that there was, it's not the same relationships we have with our husbands and wives today, is it?
Not an illegal deal.
It's not an illegal deal at the time. There was no illegal deal at the time. There was no law. He couldn't violate a law that wasn't law, was he? Yes, sir?
Witness says it's more than likely that this happened, this marriage, whatever it's called, happened some years before. It didn't.
And there's reasons for that, because they send these people away, and generally you send the children away when they're around 40. And you see him show him sending the children away, so the time frame in there just doesn't fit. But we'll see that he sends these people away. And like I said, so there are some ideas in there. There are some people that think that it was after, and there's some people that think that it happened during Sarah. Why does that matter to us? it doesn't really matter to me. But there are, I just want to give you some rules of thought that are out there that greater minds than me know about. That's the reason why I read commentary. We don't always have to agree with the commentary, but you know, it never hurts to read them. Sometimes it gives you a different way of thinking. I'm not always the right way. But you know, iron sharpens iron, right? So it's kind of like us sitting in here talking back and forth. You know, if two people disagree, both people can't be right, right? Both people could be wrong. But both people can't be right. So it disagreement's not a bad thing sometimes, is it? It helps us to maybe move along our path a little bit more. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because there's some things out there about that. Now, it says, so basically that was his wife, and it was considered a wife here, but again, over in Chronicles, they called her a concubine. Whatever, he had relationships and had children. Now, it says, and Abraham gave all he had to Isaac. It says, but to the sons of the concubine, which Abraham gave gifts and sent them away from his son Isaac while he yet lived eastward into the east country. So when it says that he gave all to Isaac, he does not mean he gave everything he had to Isaac. What it's basically saying is that Isaac was set up as being the person that was receiving everything he had when he died. He was the heir to the throne, as would be our heir to all of his fortune. But Abraham took care of the children that he had by the concubine. Now, when they come to a certain age, he gave them gifts and he sent them away. Why did he send them away? Well, and I don't know if it's looking at, and Coach, you have a valid point there. I don't think there'd always be somebody come pop up and say, well, yeah, but I'm Abraham's son too. But he's also greasing the wheel for his son. He's trying to make this easier for Isaac. He loves Isaac, right? And he wants to make it just as easy for Isaac as he can. So he takes and he sends these people far away with gifts and beyond. He supplied what they need to grow in their own area. He gave them, he didn't have to give them anything, but he gave them enough and he moved them away from his son. Why? Because he knew that the same reason why he took and he found a woman, a mother, a wife for his son, a mother for his heirs back in his hometown, because he didn't want them to be, by all the people around him. He didn't want the cancer of the belief of all the people around him to come in and within that family. If he had married a woman, a Canaanite woman, she's going to bring Canaanite thoughts into it, right? And Canaanite ways off into it. He couldn't have that. God didn't want that. Abraham knew God didn't want that. He wanted the line to be as pure as possible. So he said, I want you to go back and get, I'm sure God told Abraham, I want you to go back and I want you to get something from people that believe who I am. They believe like him. Even though we're way back over there, they still serve that God. So that's the reason why he kind of went. And now he's trying to make sure that he's moving these troublesome elements away from his son, because he knows he has walked the earth for some 200, well, no, not 200, for some 100 and plus years. And he knows how the people around you can infect, tell you a little leaven leavens the whole lump, right? One bad apple spoils the whole bunch. We used to tell that to our children all the time, didn't we? It's true. When you get in with a bad crowd, guess what? Your mind starts thinking, that bad crowd starts being insinuating, it starts insinuating its thoughts into your mind. Sooner or later, whenever the choice comes up, you have this competing thought in there, which you don't need. We have this same battle in our life as walking with as children of God, do we not? We have this fleshly man that says, I want to do what I want to do. And we have this godly man over here saying, you can't do that. You have a relationship with God. You have to realize the price that was paid for your salvation. The man died for you on a cross. God died for you on a cross. What is the just reward for that? Everything I have should be given to him. He died for me. I should live for him. That's what the Bible tells us, right? We don't always do that, do we? So basically, he's trying to clear the road for Isaac a little bit, make him a little bit, pull away from all these outside influences that would come in and influence him. And it goes on to say, but the sons of so he gave everything he had to Isaac. In other words, Isaac was noted as his true heir. But to the sons of the concubines which Abraham had, he gave gifts and sent them away from Isaac his son while yet he lived eastward into the east country. This is why he had control. And it goes to say, these are the days of Abraham's life, which he lived, 115 years. 100 or 3 score and 15 years. 100? 3 score is 20 times 3. 15 years is, 15 years, we do the math, it's 175. 175 years old. That's old. Some of y'all people here think y'all are old. Y'all are just spring chickens, as somebody would always tell me. No, we're not that old. He goes on to say, sometimes the body tells you different, doesn't it? Okay, and it goes to say that Abraham gave up the ghost and died at a good old age, an old man, full of years, and was gathered unto his people. He was a very old man. He died in a... He basically died at an old age and as an old man, and he was with his own people when he did that. Sometimes that's all you can ask for. Isaac, yes, sir?
Your commentary had anything about the statement being gathered?
I didn't read into that, so I would not know. I didn't delve into that. I would need to look into that. I don't know. It goes on to say, his sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah. Now understand that Isaac and Ishmael, they come together and buried their father together. So, I don't know if there was much confrontation, you know, whenever, because Ishmael had been sent away, right? Yes, sir?
Don't you think that probably there was some contact? Because they weren't in, Beersheba is south, and Ishmael was also in Hagar, was sent south toward Egypt. That's where he got a wife. Okay, so more than likely, it seems to me like there was some contact between, like maybe Ishmael came around and
I don't know. I don't know if there was. Yeah. There had to be some communication at this time because Ishmael did come to his father's funeral. So evidently there was some communication between the families even at this particular time. Even though he was sent away. And why was he sent away? He was sent away because the same reason the other concubine children were sent away. There was going to be no competition for who God set forth in this family. So they come together, these two men, and I'm sure some of the other kids came down too, I don't know, but they're talking about these two. It says, and his son Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, which is before Mamre, which the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth, there was Abraham buried and Sarah his wife. So basically they took him and they took him to the same burial plot that they bought. He bought this burial chamber for his family, right? And it's an everlasting, he purchased it, it's his. And that's exactly where he's being buried. He's being buried. That later on, we'll see that his grandson requested that his bones be carried out of Egypt and placed inside this same tomb. This same tomb. And I'm not mistaken, it's in the Gaza, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it's still there to this day. I've done some research on that. If it's the same tomb, I think it's still there to this day. But I would have to do a little more research. If that's been a week or two since I've looked at that, and my brain kind of rolls out. And it came to pass in the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac, and Isaac dwelt by the well in Lahairoi. Lahairoi. Okay. And these were the generations of Ishmael, the son, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. These were the names of the son of Ishmael by their names according to the generation firstborn of Ishmael. Amen. Yeah.
That place bare
Lahairoi. Yeah. Yep. Yep. They're not far away from each other, are they? Okay, so, and these are the names of the son of, and that generation of firstborn of Israel. Here we go again. Nebahoth, and Kedar, and Adbeel, and Mibsam, and Mishma, and Duma, and Massa, and Hadar, and Tema, and Jetur, Nephesh, Kadama. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their towns, by their castles, 12 princes according to their nations. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137 years. And he gave up the ghost, and he died and was gathered unto his people. And they dwelt from Hebalah to Shur, that is, before Egypt, as thou goest into Assyria. And he died in the presence of all his brethren. So, first off, there's some neat stuff here. How many children did he have? That's amazing. He had 12 children. He had 12 princes, right? It says in 25:16, these are the sons of Ishmael's by their names, by their towns, by their castles. 12 princes according to their nations. Yeah, but the women don't matter back then. And I'm not trying to be derogatory with that. It's just that's not the way the thing. But my interesting thing here is that how many sons does Jacob have? It's amazing how these numbers come back and play in the Bible, right? God has different ways of doing things. So I see 12 there and 12 here. Sometimes see 7 and 7. Sometimes see 3 and 3. It's just different ways you see how God kind of puts different things in. And I see that, and I don't know if I'm right with it, but it just seems right. But these are the Arabian people, okay? These are like the Arabian Nights. Arabian Nights, Arabian... Y'all know the song. But anyway, Disney did a movie about that. But notice they didn't live in Egypt, they lived up against Egypt. So even though he was from Egypt descent, his father was Abraham, and he got a wife from Egypt, even though that, he still didn't like go back. He was like a I would say there was a little buffer between the two out there. So he worked up against Egypt, but he didn't actually go back into Egypt right there. And he become nations. And that was the promise that was given to Hagar, was it not? I'm going to make of him nations. And God followed exactly what he said he was going to do. You see how many, it's amazing when you look at some of the stuff that happens today and you see how many people in the Middle East take and trace their lineage back to Abraham. And are considered the forefather of a different people. These people can trace, most of these people that are fighting over there can trace their lineage right back to family members. And it's a sad thing of what went on over there. And we'll get down to that in a little bit. But yeah, you're right. You know, the firstborn should have preeminence over stuff. And they feel that Ishmael should have been the one that inherited everything that Abraham had. And that's the way they look at it. But we know that God had a different thing. Why? Because God took care of the burden of Isaac. When it comes to Ishmael, man had his hand in that one. You know, the scheming of a woman. Huh? Yep. Now, we're going to move forward. It's going to move forward quite a bit. It's not going to tell a lot of the raising or how you notice that it doesn't, there's not a lot on exactly, we see a few things before how Isaac was taken away to thing, but you know, there's a lot of gaps and they don't tell us a lot about the boyhood of Isaac. So it moves all the way forward to another time. And it says, and these are the generation of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begot Isaac. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to his wife. So if Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to his wife, that means Abraham was 140 years old at that time. So he was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to his wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padanaram. There we go. The sister of Laban, Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord, his wife, because she was barren. And the Lord entreated him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. So when his wife come, he got his wife, and time had went by, and we see that he got married when he was 40, right? That means that Abraham was 140. So that means that now Abraham died at 175, right? So if we're talking chronologically, how many years have they been married at this particular time? Come on, we can do math. 35. If it's in straight chronological order and this happened, I don't see no reason why it wouldn't be, but that means that he's 75 years old right now. They've been married 35 years and they still don't have a child. She's barren. So he prays to God and he's like, God, can you do something for me? My wife's barren. I'd like to have children. So he took and he, and if I'm wrong with any of this, please somebody jump up and say, cause like I said, sometimes I read off into things, but he prayed to God and God answered his prayer and allowed her to conceive. And the children struggled together within her. In other words, this was not an easy pregnancy. Not only that, they said the children. So that means there's twins, right? So God had twins come through her. And they struggled together within her. So it was not a very easy pregnancy. She could feel a lot of movement going around in there. And it was to the point where she asked the Lord. She said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire to the Lord. In other words, she went to God and said, why am I having such problems with, why do I feel different than what I've heard all the other women talk about how they are when they're pregnant? I have had those issues. And the Lord said to her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. The one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. There's a lot there. So, and two manner of people are separated in thy bowels. When it says two manner of people, what do we kind of get when we see two manner of people? Two people of different side of ideology, right? Two different manner of people. They're not alike. They're going to be birthed almost at the same time from your, they're growing together, but they're not compatible. They're not alike. They're two different manner of people. Okay? And it says, and two different manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. You shall give birth to two different types of people. And one shall be stronger than the other people. Who's stronger than the other people? Esau stronger. Jacob comes back from his sojourn where he gets two wives and a whole bunch of children and sheep and everything, and comes back and he goes to meet his brother. He puts his family on one side, and he's scared of Abraham. Esau, right? Why is he scared of Esau? Because Esau is the stronger. Now we see Esau treats him pretty good at that particular time, but that's a whole nother story and we'll get to it later. But Esau is the stronger of the two. So one shall be stronger than the other people. And it goes on to say that the elder shall serve the younger. That's not the way it's supposed to be, is it? Who's supposed to be at the birthright? Who's supposed to get everything the father has? Who's supposed to get the right to run the family? The oldest person. That was the way it was done. That was tradition. But God says at this particular time, the older person is going to serve the younger person. Why? Because God chose it that way. And it says, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first come out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called him Esau. Now, I've read some stuff on this. They said that, you know, there's some doctors that say that some people can be born with like a lot of hair or whatever. And Esau must have been a hairy guy, because later on his daddy's going to reach out and touch his arm, and he's going to know he is, because he's got a pungent odor about him and he's hairy. They take a goat skin and put it on his brother so that they can mimic what his brother feels like. That's a hairy dude. So Esau he comes out red. So red hair. Red all over like a hairy garment, and they called him Esau. And after this came out his brother, his hand took a hold of Esau's heel, so his name was Isaac. Therefore, his name was Isaac. His name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 80 years when. And Isaac was 80 years when he bare them. So my numbers were a little off here, wasn't it? Please excuse 60. So my numbers were a little off. Thank you for fixing me. At this particular time, he was 60 years old, huh?
So that means Abraham saw Jacob.
Most likely. She said that means that Abraham most likely saw his grandsons. Most likely. I don't see why he wouldn't. And he probably knew his grandsons. Usually when I'm wrong, the Bible fixes me. So that's the truth. I got fixed. So he was 60 years old when she bare him. Bare them. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning warrior, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he did eat his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. It's amazing how Esau was a man's man. He was the hunter, the gatherer. He went out and did what men were supposed to do, right? And Isaac, he was one of these guys that like hanging back at the house. Jacob was back at the house. He was cooking and everything like that. That was his kind of thing. He was, as Coach just said, he was a mama's boy. There's nothing wrong with mama's boys. Yeah. Two different types. What do we say? You're going to have two different type of people coming out of your womb, right? Two different type of people coming out of your womb. These men are vastly different in the way they look at life and the way they do things. Their whole outlook is totally different, is it not? And we see the outlook here. You understand that Jacob is a conniver. He's a sneaky dude. Like Terry said, he's a city slicker. He's looking to get ahead. Yeah. She said that she sees that at this particular time you see a dichotomy in the household where the father favors one child, the mother favors the other child, and in her, when she was raising her children, she never played between the two children. Whenever somebody comes and said, "I'm your favorite," yeah, you're my favorite Wesley, or you're my favorite Whitney or whatever. You never allowed there to clash. They're both are just as great in your eyes. All of them look the same. But evidently that didn't happen here. And you know, yes, sir.
Tell me, someone who knows, they cannot, the fact that they're twins, but they are not identical.
No. Go talk to God. There was two eggs there. One of the eggs didn't split. There could have been two. I think, I'm not no doctor, but there was probably two different sperm that impregnated two different eggs to get two different kids. If you have identical twins, that's when the egg split or something like that. I don't know. But you're getting into stuff that I do not understand. So I'm not going to take whatever I say there as a grain of salt. I'm speaking out of ignorance. I'm gone as far with the twins as I'm going to go. I'm not a doctor, okay? If y'all want to have a whole case study on doing this, Mike will do that for you 1 week, okay?
Well, I just wanted to know how it works.
Okay, and then let's go down. I want to finish out this last bit because this is interesting. It says, Jacob... So the boys have gotten older. Now we jump forward time frame, right? And we figured out that the mama likes the younger one because he's at home helping her out. He's a mama's boy. She listens. She teaches him, taught him how to cook. I'm sure he taught him how to clean. She takes him how to deal with all the. And you know what? That he knew how to deal with the family structure. He had been learning the family business, right? And what is the older brother been doing? He's these hunter-gatherer. He likes being out in the wilderness. He likes going out and hunting and shooting things and taking care of the sheep. He likes living with the animals, which there's nothing wrong. Evidently, he's kind of pungent because whenever he comes in, his dad wants to smell him. And so Amy always said that Eric loved me because he would take and he would, when I come in from work, he would crawl in my lap and pick the head of my underarm and fall asleep. And that's not a good smell, trust me, okay? But that's what he did. It was comfort him. I guess he knew my smell. You know, Eric was a special baby, okay? She says she doesn't understand why he did it, but he did. But anyway, when they come back in, Jacob had been Jacob had been cooking, doing his stuff around the thing. And Esau had been out in the field. He had been out doing manly things, you know, working the sheep and hunting and doing things that men do outside. And he had come in and Jacob had been cooking. And it says, Jacob sawed pottage, and Esau came from the field. I don't know what a sawed pottage is. I'm gonna check over to a more. Okay, here we go. I'm gonna bring this to more our new English. It says, and Jacob was cooking stew. Okay, well, now we can deal with that. And Esau came in from the field. And he was exhausted. He was tired. Evidently, he'd come in from the field. I don't know if he'd been out all day hunting or anything. But, you know, when you come in and you've been out all day and you're tired and mama at home's been cooking a good old stew up, or this morning before I left, I threw all my stuff into the crock pot under low. And you know how that just kind of just that whole aroma thing. I'm going to smoke some meat this afternoon. And I come in the other day and I took my pork butt and I seasoned it all up and I stuck it in my refrigerator. Because I want a couple days for that stuff to get into my pork butt, okay? Every time you open the refrigerator, you smell the garlic powder and all the other stuff, all the other seasonings that I have in there just wafting out. And it's like I can smell it from across the room when Amy opens the refrigerator. And imagine you walk into, you're hungry. You're hungry. You've been out all day. And your brother over there, he's probably a good cook. Because he was taught by his mama, and we all know mama's cooked the best, right? I don't care who you marry, mama's cooking is always the best. So, all you wives have always been competing with mama's cooking for years. We tell you that it's just better than mama's, but don't believe it. Anyway, he had been cooking, and Esau came in from the field exhausted. And Esau said to Jacob, let me eat some of your red stew. For I am exhausted. Can I have something to eat, brother? I've been out all day cooking, hunting and doing all the stuff that I know I'm supposed to do. And I'm tired and I'm hungry. Give me some of your stew. Jacob, the conniver that he is, what does he say? He says, sell me your birthright now. Wait a second. I'm hungry, brother. I just want food. First thing that pops into my mind, I'd be like, okay, have a bowl. He's like, no, sell me your birthright. That tells me a couple things. Jacob wants to be first in line. His mama's probably been in his ear. It's like all this time saying, you know what? When I was with child, God talked to me and said, you were going to rule over your brother. You were going to be the ruler of this family. I could just hear that constantly. He's with his mom all the time. When I was pregnant with you, I heard that all the time. You know, when your mom was like, she always get everything. When I was pregnant with you, you did all this sort of stuff. I carried you for 9 months. And this is what happened. And this is the only children she ever had, right? So she took and he was with her all the time. And I'm sure she constantly told him this story about how he was going to be the man in charge of the family. So when he comes in, he's like, I'm hungry. He's like, okay, you want some stew? Not a problem. Sell me your birthright. And I could just hear Esau now. He says, I'm about to die. Of what use is a birthright to me? In other words, Esau care. You see how much Jacob cared for this birthright. It's mine. Mama done said it was supposed to be mine. I want it. Esau's like, I'm hungry right now. What is this to me? I don't need this birthright. It's not doing me any good. Dad's going to live to be 175 years old like Grandpa did. I don't need it. I'm good. And I'm hungry. So, he says, I'm about to die. What use is a birthright? What use is a birthright? And Jacob said, swear to me now. So he swore and sold his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau bread and lentil stew, and they ate and drank and rose, and he ate and drank and rose and went on his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright. This was a problem with Esau. We hear about this all the way up in Hebrews, do we not? In Hebrews, it says, and this is kind of a thing, it's like, I'm just going to pick it up in like 12, 13, it says, it says 12, 14, it says, strive for peace with everyone, for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, and no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. No one is sexual immoral or unholy like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. God takes this selling of this birthright the same thing if he talks to a sexually immoral person. It was abhorrent to God that he had this birthright and he did not care nothing about what God had for him, so that he would just arbitrarily sell it away. Oh, Jacob had a plan. Oh, Jacob had a plan. I'm sure he'd have been hatching a plan for years. He craved this birthright. Should we not crave that same birthright? Is it wrong for him to crave that birthright? Is it wrong for him to want God that much? God uses all of us for different times with all of our faults. God knew about the trickery beforehand. That's the reason why God could say beforehand exactly what was going to happen. Understand, I've said this before, just prior knowledge does not indicate for action. Just because God knows something's going to happen, that don't mean he caused it. The causality is his cause. God knows that I'm going to commit a sin tomorrow, and he knows exactly what that sin is. I don't know what it is yet, but I will. That's a guarantee. Does God cause that sin to happen? Just because, simply because he knows about it. There's some people out there say, well, why can't he turn you away from it? He could. But then I would be like the little golden retriever that has no thing. He's going to love you regardless of what you do. Because why? Because he's a golden retriever and that's what they do. We would be robots set alone to do certain things, and that's not how God designed it. God designed it so we have a personal responsibility and we get to choose. So we're going to close out right there, and I hope everybody had some really interesting thing this morning. I hope everybody enjoyed the teaching. I hope everybody come along with a maybe a different way of thinking or more knowledge of what they had before. So, Coach, would you close us this morning, sir?